This hour of the Michael Medved Show is brought to you by Heider Construction.
And now, your daily dose of debate, breaking news, and uncensored views. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A great day with a nationally televised memorial service. The first one of what appears to be at least three more that are coming up. This memorial service for the late George Floyd in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And his brothers spoke movingly about growing up with the kind of recollections that only a brother could provide. About how George, who his really close friends apparently and family members called him Perry, used to enjoy with his brothers eating mayonnaise and banana sandwiches, which actually touches me because growing up in a family of four boys, we ate some weird stuff. I mean, we did. I had one brother in particular, won't mention who, liked mayonnaise in particular, in a jar with a spoon, okay? It's just what boys do growing up. And the conversation from his cousin, from his brothers, they all sound like thoroughly nice people and wonderful Americans. And honestly, maybe, just maybe, if the rest of this service today and the rest of the memorial services can be conducted with the same kind of warmth and dignity and positive attitude, maybe we can emerge from this whole period with a more peaceable, more constructive attitude. That's the question I want to begin with here is, okay, what do we do? And how is this going to change things in this country? I mean, one of the things you hear from all of the protesters and all the people who are coming out, and some of them who are violating curfew, and yes, some of them who are still looting and still committing violence and still attacking police officers and still behaving in a disgraceful manner, and that is disgraceful, that at some point that's going to come to an end. It's going to pull back. It does. And it's when that pulls back, what are we left with? What is going to change? One of the changes has been the removal of Confederate memorials where they even have survived. And this is inevitable. It clearly is appropriate, though it should be done properly and legally and not through vandalism, obviously. But that appears to be going on all over the South. Governor Northam in Virginia just ordered the removal of a major Robert E. Lee statue in Richmond, which was the capital of the Confederacy. I don't know what they're going to do with the statue. They may move it to the Museum of the Confederacy. Or does that have to be closed now? They used to have the Confederate White House was a museum in Richmond. In fact, I think it still is. But do we need to erase our entire history? I mean, getting rid of prominent memorial statues, I get it. But what is the point and where are we going? We're going to be speaking a little bit later to Ralph Peters, Lieutenant Colonel retired in Army Intelligence, who is really an expert on security and foreign policies, traveled all over the world on behalf of the United States. And this has become a world issue. And there is some speculation in the international press based upon some speeches that were recently delivered in the Chinese Communist Party that the Chinese may use this particular moment in our country when we're paralyzed by a lockdown and by a pandemic and now by this racial division to, quote, unite their country, which means that they would seize Taiwan and completely obliterate any kind of respect for the difference of Hong Kong and do that with the knowledge that America is in no position right now to lead a world response. Is that a serious threat? What should we do about it? We will talk about that. And what should we do about a country? President Obama has spoken out. We'll play what he had to say. Vice President Biden, of course, has been speaking intermittently. They both believe that there should be a nationwide federalized change in police tactics to ban chokeholds. Okay. I don't know the argument against that. But I think generally there are many police departments that have banned chokeholds. And would that make a gigantic difference? And what is it that we're aiming for? Because honestly, so much of the rhetoric on the left is just totally out of touch with what people actually want and what is even vaguely possible. Karen Bass is the chairman of the Congressional Black Caucus. She's a congresswoman from California, from the Culver City, South Los Angeles area. And Karen Bass actually went to the same high school at the same time that my wife did, Hamilton High School in West L.A. And she actually disagreed with one of the priorities that has been listed by Black Lives Matter. And as the chair of the Congressional Black Caucus, I think that shows a little bit of courage. This is clip 8A. Black Lives Matter has called for defunding police departments all over the country. Karen Bass disagrees. Listen.
I wanted to ask you about the initiative that Black Lives Matter is promoting on social media about a national defunding of police departments. They're promoting that on their website and on social media. Do you support this national effort to defund police departments?
Well, let me just say, I am not familiar with that demand of Black Lives Matter. I work closely with them, and so I will consult them. But if you ask me my personal opinion, no, I don't believe that we should defund police departments.
Okay, of course we shouldn't defund police departments. This is the stupidest thing in the world. Who would suffer if we defund police departments? I think about it. Who would suffer? Do inner city neighborhoods where the victimization rates of Black people are way high, Black people are multiple times more likely to be the victims of violent crime than white people? And that's not violent crime by white people. It's violent crime by other Black people. That's the reality. And what you're talking about is a gigantic difference when it comes to the levels of victimhood here. And if the police are defunded, if they have fewer funds, if they have less money to hire more officers, or maybe even to improve police training, how does that help? Do you think that suddenly crime-ridden inner-city neighborhoods, if the police just go home and leave those neighborhoods alone because they can't afford anymore to police those neighborhoods, do you think those neighborhoods become safer? Here's Karen Bass in a continued conversation talking about police attitudes and how she believes they need to change.
I think that we need to come up with very significant legislation now, but I also think it's time to have a conversation in our country. What is policing in America? Why is it that we have two completely different standards? In my district, part of my district is very affluent and predominantly white. And in that part of my district, the police go to protect and serve. The other part of my district, which is the inner city, South Central Los Angeles, police come there with a warrior mentality. For example, many police officers have told me that when rookie officers are getting ready to graduate the academy, there's a number of them that say, I want my first assignment to be South Central so I could go there and kick butt. If you view the people you are supposed to protect and serve as enemies, and that you're in a war zone.
No, that is not the idea. When people are saying, I want to go kick butt, it's against criminals, obviously. And people are asking to go to South Central because they do have a warrior mentality against criminals, not against ordinary citizens. Or does Karen Bass deny that there is a higher crime rate in those areas? By the way, criminals is what we're talking about when we're talking about looters. So one man's fight against looting, we'll get to it coming right up. memorial service for George Floyd that is going on right now in Minneapolis. Al Sharpton is speaking to the crowd. Almost everyone is masked, but they take off their masks when they speak, as Al Sharpton has. Listen.
Roaches, is that if you keep the light off, if you're in the dark, a roach will pull up to your dinner table and have a five-course meal. So I learned one of the ways to deal with roaches is if you cut the light on, I could run them roaches and track them down. And I've spent all my life chasing roaches all over this country.
I believe he has in mind a bad cops right there, and racists, is what he, I think,
talking about. As soon as I talked to the family and got the details and heard that among George's last words was, "I can't breathe," with a knee on his neck, I immediately thought about Eric Garner. I did the eulogy at his funeral, and I called his mother. And I said, I know we're not going out because of the coronavirus, but this is so much like Eric. If we could arrange some private way to go to Minneapolis, would you go? And she said, Rev Al, I'm already packing. Let me know. Tyler Perry said, I'll give the families, the plane, whatever y'all need, because this is wrong. Robert Smith said, don't worry about the funeral costs. People across economic and racial lines started calling and getting in. And we flew out here, her and I, last Thursday. And when I stood at that spot, reason it got to me is George Floyd's story has been the story of black folks. Because ever since 401 years ago, the reason we could never be who we wanted and dreamed of being is you kept your knee on our neck.
Al Sharpton speaking at a memorial service in Minneapolis.
The underfunded schools you put us in, but you had your knee on our neck. We could run corporations and not hustle in the street, but you had your knee on our neck. We had creative skills. We could do whatever anybody else could do, but we couldn't get your knee off our neck. What happened to Floyd happens every day in this country, in education, in health services, and in every area of American life. It's time for us to stand up in George's name and say, get your knee off our necks.
This will undoubtedly become a new slogan, get your knee off our necks. Organ music in the background and the style of black Christianity, black
That's
worship.
The problem, no matter who you are. We thought maybe we had a complex, T.I., maybe it was just us. But even blacks that were broke through, you kept your knee on that neck. Michael Jordan won all of these championships, and you kept digging for mess because you got to put a knee on our neck. White housewives would run home to see a black woman on TV named Oprah Winfrey, and you mess with her because you just can't
How?
Take your knee off our neck.
Wait. Man, Michael Jordan and Oprah Winfrey are victims?
Educates himself and rises up and becomes the president of the United States. And you ask him for his birth certificate. Because you can't take your knee off our neck. The reason why we're marching all over the world is we were like George. We couldn't breathe, not because there was something wrong with our lungs, but you wouldn't take your knee off our neck. We don't want no favors. Just get up off of us, and we can be and do whatever we can be.
Okay, this is actually very, very useful. What does it mean, Reverend Al, to take the knee off the neck of people of color? Maybe he's explaining now.
There have been protests all over the world. Some have looted and done other things. And none of us in this family condones looting or violence.
Good.
But the thing I want us to be real cognizant of is there's a difference between those calling for peace and those calling for quiet. Some of y'all don't want peace. You just want quiet. You just want us to shut up and suffer in silence. The overwhelming majority of the people marching wasn't breaking windows. They were trying to break barriers. They weren't trying to steal nothing. They were trying to get back the justice you stole from us. Those that broke the law should pay for whatever law they broke, but so should the four policemen that caused this funeral today. We don't have a problem denouncing violence, Mr. Governor. We don't have a problem, Mr. Mayor, denouncing looting. But it seems like some in the criminal justice system have a problem looking at a tape and knowing there's probable cause, and it takes a long time for you to go and do what you see that you need to do.
What long time did it take? I don't understand this, but he continues. Oh, actually, we have to go to a break. If Al does explain to us what it means to take our knees off the necks of oppressed people, then we will get to that. The crowd, very enthusiastic about Al Sharpton's oratory at the memorial service for the late George Floyd. I believe that Congresswoman Ilhan Omar, who is local, of course, in Minneapolis, is there at the service. We will provide you the very latest and much more. The Drew Brees controversy. What did he do that was so wrong? We'll get to that coming up. On the Michael Medved show, there does seem to be at least a slight retreat in some of the looting and the damage and the violence across the country. It's not over yet. But one place where it was turned around, the chances of looting and violence very early on, was Renton, Washington. And we spoke about a guy named Maurice Whitney, who you can see a photograph. He came to defend his neighborhood, or a neighborhood in which he has property, he has businesses, against potential looters, because they'd been warning about looting hitting Renton, Washington, which is less than a half hour away from downtown Seattle. Maurice Whitney is with us now. I'm looking at the picture of you, Maurice. Are you standing in front of one of your businesses in this photograph?
Actually, I was not. I was kitty corner to that business. That was another.
Oh, okay.
House. that owned the business that asked us if we would take care of her business as well.
Okay. And you're, just so people know, you can see the photograph. We're going to post it on our website at michaelmedved.com. You're looking smiling, friendly. You're also wearing a flak jacket, and you're carrying a pretty formidable weapon. What is that strapped on your chest there?
It's called a DP-12. It's literally a double-barrel shotgun, and it's not semi-automatic.
And, okay, so what happened the night that you were there? Somebody said, oh, this looks so intimidating, and you said, it's supposed to be intimidating. Not to the protesters, but the people who want to cause trouble. So what happened?
So what happened was, it was on Sunday night that we got calls that people were heading into Renton, and they started hitting the Walmart and hitting many of the other businesses. And there was a couple of hits within a block of our businesses. And so we went heading down there to take shelter in our business and try and see if we could fend off some of the it wasn't the protesters that were there, especially Sunday night. There was no protesters. So we were going down there just to see what we could do. And then it actually worked. So we noticed that if we were around and we were outside and we made ourselves present, they went elsewhere. You know, I'm not sure where they went, but they definitely left our area. And so the next day...
The next day is Monday, right?
Yes.
Right, go ahead.
So then the next day, we had gotten word that Renton was going to become the target. There was going to be Renton, Puyallup, and Covington were going to be the targets for people to come down and basically wreak havoc. And we had also been told that there was going to be a protest. And so knowing that these guys tend to infiltrate the back end of the protest, we were wanting to make a stance that we were actually there in support of the protest, because I don't know anybody in that area especially that isn't feel horrible for what happened to Floyd.
Maurice, you're fading in and out. Are you on a speakerphone?
No, I'm not. So here, let me try this. Okay, so what we were there is we wanted the protesters to know that we were a community, and none of us were organized. And there's been lots of rumors out there and stuff. So we were just basically coming out to protect the protesters as much as protect our businesses. And so we decided to make a showing. And when I asked some friends and customers that had offered to volunteer to come down, they showed up. And there was a group of probably about 7 or 8 of us. And we did have armor on and stuff like that. And we walked out on the street. And it was amazing, because as we looked down the street, because people felt comfortable when they seen us, groups started coming out of every one of the businesses. And so when you got done, there was just the whole 2 blocks was had people there to protect their properties. And none of these people belonged to any factions. In fact, we were approached by some of them, and we turned them down and said, we don't belong to you. We don't believe in what you guys believe in, and we don't want anything. We don't want you here. So the police contacted me, and I assured them that we were just there for peace, and that we would back them up in any way we could. And they felt comfortable, and they said, well, you know, if people talk to you, please talk to them. And so I made a point that, you know, I had several people come up to me, and you know, I was called a racist and things of that sort. And I tried to explain to them that, you know, I have businesses there, and everybody that frequents my businesses would reassure them that there's no way I have anything racist about me. And it was purely just a peaceful thing. I actually walked with the protesters. And a couple of them talked to me, and they asked me, and I said, I'm here for your protection as much as I am to protect the building and the businesses. You know, if something was to happen, I would step between you and them just as fast as I would between them and my building.
I know that you're talking about, you have businesses in downtown Renton, which is historic, and a lot of buildings just in the process of restoration and trying to make it a more welcoming and even more charming kind of destination. Was there any property destruction that occurred in Renton at all?
In Renton, absolutely. In Renton, there was quite a bit of it. About a block away from us, there was a Ben's Loan that got hit. There was a tattoo shop that got hit. And, of course, the Walmart and the Fred Meyer and the Target. I mean, it was definitely roaming through there. When it came to our blocks, I have to be honest with you, the president that we were there and the way that we looked and stuff, it served its purpose. So we are old buildings. Our buildings are, you know, 50 to 100 years old, and the area has really been doing good and booming. But if somebody was to throw a Molotov cocktail or something like that on the roof, it would have burned the whole block. You know what I mean? And at that point, wow, that was one of our biggest concerns. Go ahead.
Do you have a sense, because I've heard several theories, are most of the people doing the looting, are they criminal gangs, or is it a more organized left-wing kind of operation like Antifa?
Well, to be honest with you, I don't really know. I've had people come up and talk to me on the streets, so I can only tell you what I've heard on the streets, and I've heard it's been everything from white supremacists to Antifa to, you know, multiple different organizations that are out there that just seem to be piggybacking on this to cause trouble. And that was kind of what our whole point was, is that we wanted to stand with the community and the protesters and say, you know what, we're not against having a peaceful protest, and we don't want to take sides. We're not part of a gang or anything. We're just your average Joe that owns a business down here. That we don't, you know, the insurance isn't going to cover these when it takes place with a riot. The insurance companies look for excuses to back out, and that's one of them that they can use. And so,
very quickly in the time left to us, Maurice, what about the most recent nights? Have you had to come out every night? Where things?
The first nights that we went out, you know, last night we found bricks staged and stuff like that. I even took pictures of those and stuff. But last night was probably the quietest night. We walked around and we patrol. We just go out and we patrol. And last night was the quietest night. But in my heart of hearts, I have to say that as much as this bothers a lot of people, the overwhelming support we got from the community has been great, and it helped. It did it. We have not had any problem in that area, and I think that us being there has definitely made a difference. The police have said it definitely made a difference. And if people want to support us, the thing to do is come to our area and support the businesses, because it's been one hit after another. You know, everything from the minimum wage being raised on us to Boeing happening to the virus happening now to this. As small businesses go, I mean, I have a restaurant, Cedar River Barbecue, and I'll have to tell you, this has huge impact on us every little bit. And it's been a very, very, very rough start to a year here.
Are you going to be able to reopen to have customers sit down at the Cedar River Smokehouse Barbecue? Is that happening soon?
We're hoping. To be honest with you, I haven't had a chance to sit down and read the health board stuff. It seems like every time
be coming. God willing, peace on the streets and a profitable business in the Cedar River Smokehouse Barbecue in Renton. Maurice Strong, thanks for what you're doing and your example. We'll be right back.
The Michael Medved Show, michaelmedved.com.
On the Michael Medved Show, while we were speaking with Maurice Strong, Renton, Washington, something of a local hero. I mean, his example protecting his own and his neighbor's businesses and the area where he works and really provides jobs for people. With all of that going on, Al Sharpton has a different idea. His idea is that what we need right now is a march on Washington. Really? What happened to social distancing? I guess the assumption is that by August 28th, that everything will be fine. And the pandemic, God willing, will be behind us, or we'll have a vaccine or something. But anyway, here's the Reverend Sharpton. Listen.
I'm glad Martin III is here today. Because on August 28th, the 57th anniversary of the March on Washington, we're going back to Washington, Martin. That's where your father stood in the shadows of the Lincoln Memorial and said, I have a dream. Well, we're going back this August 28th to restore and recommit that dream, to stand up, because just like at one era, we had to fight slavery, another era, we had to fight Jim Crow, another era, we dealt with voting rights. This is the era to deal with policing and criminal justice. We need to go back to Washington and stand up, black, white, Latino, Arab, in the shadows of Lincoln, and tell them this is the time to stop this.
To stop what? And this is what is so frustrating about all of this, because first of all, is it as if we've heard nothing about police violations? If you go back to Michael Brown, and by the way, so much of this really began in the Obama administration, and so many of the cases and so much of the hatred. And you remember there were four Dallas police officers who were killed by a radical. That was under President Obama. President Obama at least has spoken out condemning violence, and that's a good thing. But the question is, when this has to stop by every measure, there are no measures available. People, suspects dying, black and white, in police custody, that number has gone down. And there has been an abundance of studies. We spoke to Heather McDonald and Jason Riley, one white scholar and one black scholar. And Jason Riley, black scholar working on the work of a black economist, Roland Fryer at Harvard. If anything, in recent years, it is white suspects who have been more likely in encounters with police to end up dead. Now, I know it's politically incorrect to say that, but the idea that this has to stop, the idea that somehow people like Al Sharpton was mentioning before, Michael Jordan, Oprah Winfrey, Barack Obama, are victimized by black cops. By the way, what he may be referring to, I remember there's an episode, Oprah was in Switzerland at one point, and there was someone, believe it or not, in Switzerland, in a store where she was looking at a handbag that was very, very expensive. I think it was $16,000, something like that. She can afford it. She's Oprah. So Oprah's looking at the handbag, and the Swiss lady behind the counter says, no, no, that's not for you. You can't afford that. Okay, she didn't realize it was Oprah. It was insulting. It was a racially tinged remark. It's unfortunate. But for goodness sake, has Oprah had someone's knee against her neck to prevent her from being one of the most powerful and admired women in the world? Or President Obama? Or his daughters? This is unbelievable. Al Sharpton concluded with a closing statement that maybe was meant to be healing. Let's listen. Yeah, it was just sent to your email, Jer. We can get to that in a moment.
Leaning on the Lord, trusting in his holy word. He never failed me yet. From the outhouse to the White House, we come a long way. God will, God shall, God will, God always has. He'll make a way for his children. Go on home, George. Get your rest, George. You changed the world, George. We're going to keep marching, George. We're going to keep fighting, George. We done turned the clock, George. We're going forward, George. Time out. Time out. Time out.
I'm not sure. Jeremy, do you know what the timeout? I mean, remember timeout? They what the Hashtag Me Too stuff was time's up, not time out. I'm not sure what all of this means. George, you changed the world. Let us hope it is for the better. But this goes to a tremendous piece. It's extremely valuable. And I know I tend to find the same people who resonate with my thinking. But one of them is Daniel Henninger of the Wall Street Journal, who I'm proud to say has been become a frequent guest of the show. He writes today, "It is evident from the coverage that most of the demonstrators were born after 1990. By then, Lyndon Johnson's Great Society programs had been in place for 25 years, and now it's 55 years after they were put in place. Annual budget appropriations totaling multiple trillions of dollars on Medicaid, food stamps, Head Start, welfare, public housing, rent subsidies, and federal aid to public schools. They have produced what?" And this is basically the point. Far from the federal government, first of all, the federal government and most state governments have been in control of Democrats. You will notice that these cities that are being disproportionately despoiled are cities that are run by progressives. Do you get any further left than Bill de Blasio in New York City? Really? Do you? Do you get much further left than Lori Lightfoot in Chicago, the new mayor of Chicago, lesbian black mayor of Chicago? I mean, honest to goodness, what are we talking about here? In other words, if we're talking about you changed the world, George, how? Daniel Henninger writes, "Five decades of stasis and stagnation in America's most marginalized places, virtually all of it under Democratic, now progressive political control. The failure of the liberal model is by now so embarrassing that the current owners of that model have created an alternative universe of explanation, such as blaming everything on American settlers in the early 1600s or the non-existence of justice." This is the basic point. We were told when he talks about the last march on Washington, or 5 years later, Dr. King had planned a poor people's campaign. And it was going to be to address poverty in the country. And by the way, America has made progress. There's another piece by Gregory Ipp. It's a very important piece about how in one of the most meaningful areas, which is the percentage of people who are working full time, it used to be a huge gap between black and white. At the beginning of this year, before the pandemic hit, that had closed to within 2 points. 2 points. 60% of black people were gainfully employed. And this is not just an unemployment rate. The unemployment rate, it also reaches, people know, President Trump talks about it all the time, black unemployment had reached an all-time low. Now it's worse now, but it's worse for everybody. And our black communities and Hispanic communities particularly hard hit by the pandemic? Yes. By the way, is it going to help people when they go to these mass gatherings night after night after night? In other words, you're not allowed in the state of Pennsylvania, according to the health director, to go to a mass church gathering, except if it turns into a demonstration. Then demonstrations, absolutely. The problem is we have multiple problems. No one, certainly not Al Sharpton, is showing a constructive way out. We have to begin to do that, don't we? Because we're going to remain the greatest nation on God's green earth.